Hey everybody, welcome back to Virtual Crosswalk as we continue in this series, Go Be Jesus. Today we're talking about connecting with God as something that Jesus was very, very intentional about doing in his life. I'm sure you've heard the phrase, spiritual but not religious. It's been very popular for the last 40 years when you ask people about their faith. And what they're indicating is that they pursue some form of spirituality, but don't want so much to do with organized religion. And we can all understand why from all of the stats that we've received through research over many, many years. I think Jesus probably would have really resonated with people who said that as well, as he was really sick and tired of the Jewish leadership that was leading things in his day. He called them out, which is why he got killed. I've heard it said that we are not human beings having a spiritual experience, but rather we are spiritual beings having a human experience. Kind of turns it on its head. I wonder if Jesus was the full complement to help us see things in all of its fullness. Fully human, experiencing the fullness of God at the same time. I wonder if that's what made him such a remarkable person. But today, we're talking about spirituality, embracing God. There's a woman by the name of Kirsten Oates. She got an urgent call that she needed to get on a flight as soon as possible to visit her sister in Manila in the Philippines. So she got on board this flight. Her sister was giving birth to her daughter, way premature. And luckily the baby survived, but was in neonatal ICU. And the sister, Kirsten, was there on her way to support her sister who'd just given birth. So she's on this 15-plus hour flight. About 7 hours into the flight, the whole plane started to shake. One of the engines was starting to fail. All of a sudden, the communication system in the plane stopped working. The plane was shaking so violently that she said that glassware was falling out of the galley and crashing down. She was looking at the aisle ahead of her, and there was a couple that were on the opposite side of the aisle, and they were trying to hold hands to comfort each other. And the shaking was so violent in the plane, they couldn't keep their hands together. Kirsten talks about how she herself had to force her hands and hold on to the armrest, even though she was buckled in as tight as she possibly could. She was getting so shaken around that she had to hold herself in for fear of flying out of her seat. Pretty soon, the physical signs of shock were starting to enter her, and she recognized what was going on. Her sense of hearing started to disappear. Things started to turn gray. She could feel blood rushing from her face, and she was worried that she was going to pass out pretty soon. Out of her anxiety, naturally. So she caught herself, and she started to do some meditation exercise, which is kind of hard to believe, but she did. And the thing that she kept saying to herself is, it's going to be okay. I'm going to be okay. It's going to be okay. I'm going to be okay. And slowly and surely, she was able to calm herself down, and she said in that moment she had a profound experience where she was in some way transported into this scene, which she can only barely describe with words, but it was this space and time. She calls it an illuminated darkness, where she could recognize what was going on, and she was sort of in this in-between state, almost like she was on inside of a bubble or looking at a bubble. And on one side of that membrane of the bubble was her life that she'd been living. And on the other side was afterlife. And she had this strange calm come around her that either way it was going to go, back to the life she knew or on to afterlife, it was going to be okay. It deeply calmed her down. It gave her confidence. There was another profound experience I'll talk about on Wednesday, perhaps, if we get together, that she also experienced in this space. But she came out of this space and was calm for the rest of the 8 hours she still had to go. It gave her peace, resolve, power, strength to get forward. She calls this, or at least nerds like me, call this liminal space. It's where the presence of God touches us in our present life, our physical reality, and we cannot forget it. I've had a few of these in my life, and they're deeply powerful. Well, why would we want to connect with God? Well, it has a lot to do with that liminal space, this actually experiencing the presence of God and knowing that we're not alone in this world, that there is something greater. There is a greater other that's different, that the spirituality is born out of something that is actually real. Jesus was certainly a devotee of this stuff, and he worked hard to connect. The Apostle Paul talked about this. He learned the ways of Jesus, and in one of his letters to his favorite church, the Philippians, I almost said Philippines because I was just talking about that, but the Philippians, he said, you know, if you model your life in a certain way, you will experience a peace that passes understanding. Jesus went unto his death in the most torturous way and yet seemed to have a strength and a center and a resolve all the way through. In one of his remembered statements, he talked about what it means to be connected with God. And this is just a lift out of what he said. We'll look at more of this actually in a couple of weeks. But he tells his disciples, live in me. Make your home in me just as I do in you. In the same way that a branch can't bear grapes by itself, but only by being joined to the vine, you can't bear fruit unless you are joined in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. When you are joined with me and I with you, the relation intimate and organic, the harvest is sure to be abundant. So we're going to look at some spiritual practices today that keep us connected to the vine, because it was a key ingredient in Jesus' life that made a huge difference, connecting us to God. One of the realities is to help us get to a place where we recognize that first thing, that we're spiritual beings having a human experience. I've used this before, and it's almost cliche now, but if you ask a fish to tell you about the water that the fish is swimming in, the fish will just simply ask, what is water? Because they are so familiar with it. I think we've gotten away from this reality in terms of our spiritual awareness. But when we choose to connect with God, and as Christians, we follow the lead of Jesus on this, we are able to see the water, in this case, the very presence of God that we are swimming in. And we discover that these things of God are not these momentary, disparate kind of experiences, but actually the reality of God is all around us and is there for us to experience. The question is, do we have eyes to see? Do we have ears to hear? Do we have heart to sense it? Do we have minds that are open that the presence of God actually might touch us? I believe so. But some of this is up to us, and it's cultivated by what we do with our lives. Crosswalker Pam Reuter was telling me an experience she had that was quite profound. Some months, actually many, many months ago, she was driving around the car, just running errands like any other day, and she's listening to the radio, happened to be K-Love, which is a Christian radio station. And this particular song came on that wasn't an incredible song, but it was a song she wasn't familiar with. She'd never heard it before, but something about the song just got her attention. The name of the song was You Know Me Better by a group called Stars Go Dim. And she didn't know the song, she didn't quite catch the name of the song, but it just grabbed her attention and she could not figure out why. So when she was able, she called the radio station and put them to work to help her figure out what the name of this song was, because it just grabbed her so much. And after a while, they finally gave her the name of the song, as I mentioned, and she just kind of put it to bed and listened to it a few times, and it was all good. And then went on with her life. A few months later, she got a terrible phone call that a house that she owned, which she was renting out to other people, was on fire. She rushed over to find firefighters already at work trying to put out the fire, trying to get an understanding of what's going on here. Gratefully, nobody was injured, and the firefighters were just trying to make it so it wasn't a total loss. Well, as you can imagine, in that kind of a scenario, you're pretty exacerbated. And she was right where she should be, just in the moment, in the emotion, and just feeling the weight of what was happening right before her eyes. After she realized there was nothing more that she could do, she went back into her car, put the key in the ignition, turned the key, and immediately that song played as soon as the radio got power. The same song. And she said at that moment she sensed in a very real way that God was with her. That somehow this made a connection for her. That months ago she hears this song which grabs her. And then in her moment of need, that song is the song that pops on the radio. It's powerful stuff. The reality is, though, Pam didn't luck out with this, but I know Pam, and I know that the way she leads her life and the way she organizes her life is she practices her faith. She puts things in her life to help foster her life of faith. That makes a difference, because when we do those things that Jesus did, that Jesus instructed in, it helps shape our eyes, our ears, our hearts, our minds, so that we're able to experience more of what God is doing right in front of our noses. And I wonder if Pam wasn't doing any of that stuff, if she wasn't cultivating a life of faith, I wonder if the whole thing would have been lost on her. She never would have really paid attention to that song for whatever reason it grabbed her. And it would have just been another song, and she would have been weeping, wondering where was God, instead of this profound experience of the presence and love of God surrounding her. I just love that story. I think it's incredible. And speaking of music, I think music is, especially music that fosters our faith in some way, is an incredibly powerful tool to help us connect more deeply with God. There's been an abundance of worship music that's come out over the last 40 years, and sometimes that can be really good. That used to be an incredibly powerful thing in my life, and I could just get in the zone. Sometimes even secular music, if it's the right kind of stuff, not like, Hell's Bells or anything by AC/DC perhaps, but, more meaningful, substantive songs, even those songs can really speak deeply to us if we'll allow them to. Instrumental songs, in fact, sometimes have the power to speak to us and speak for us in powerful, powerful ways, where God meets us there and works with the music and the emotion of the music to kind of massage us and bring us to where we need to be. It's really quite profound. There's this one song that we do pretty regularly at Crosswalk called Full Attention by Jeremy Riddle. And I just want to take a moment just to have this in front of us now, because I love the song and I love the message of the song, and I think it kind of gets at where we're going today. So take a moment and enjoy this song now. Thank you. You know, another thing that is really helpful for people, at least it is for me in particular, is nature. Getting outside and enjoying the creation that we have. Jesus did this when he went, right after he got baptized, he went out into the wilderness, took a little camping trip so he could get his head on straight and decide what this whole thing was going to look like. And he met God in that space in profound ways. He was outside. He was alone. He could hear. He could see. He could experience things differently. I love that kind of stuff. You know, when I slow down and I'm in places of great grandeur, like by the ocean, which is so easy for us to access, or a redwood grove with these trees that are centuries old, or if I'm at a place like Yosemite or even just in the mountains and the grandeur of the granite, it just reminds me of the expansiveness of creation. It reminds me of history. And in some weird way, it gives me peace and lets me let go of some of the stresses of this life when I am standing before things that are so old and seemingly timeless. Jesus talked about nature, too, as reference points for us to come into greater contact with God. In one passage, he talks about, consider the lilies of the field, consider the birds of the air, to contemplate these things, to think about these things. And, you know, I agree. There are some times where things that are right in front of us can speak volumes to us. So I have this little video I want to show you. I had to go get a car smog the other day. And while I'm getting the car smog, there was this massive bush. I think it's an oleander bush, just huge thing. And the amount of noise and life that was coming from this bush was astounding. Right there next to a smog shop. Check this thing out. It's not going to last too long, but I hope this translates onto the video because it's pretty cool. Check it out. Isn't that something? So you got these bees buzzing around, you got these birds singing like crazy, full of life around this living thing, the plant. It's astounding. I wonder if we ever slow down enough to notice just the incredible beauty and power of nature that's right with us. Richard Rohr talks about how the creation illumines the creator, that one reflects the other. And I wonder if you might take some time to do this yourself. You know, Crosswalker Carrie Nuccio, she's a nature junkie. She was a biology major, some of you don't know that, and she's one of these weird people that likes bugs and does, you know, likes to well, I don't know if she dissects them, I guess she does, but she at least likes to examine creepy crawly things and snakes, I mean, all kinds of stuff she's into. So anyhow, but she has this little niche set out on where she lives so she can immerse herself in nature and just allow that experience to nurture her soul. And guess what? God shows up in those moments and does just that. She is a big fan of Yosemite. Don't get her started on that. It is a cathedral for her and me too. And she got us hooked on something that my wife and I, Carrie got us hooked on something that she does nearly every visit to Yosemite. She finds this marker by Yosemite Falls that is supposedly the very spot that John Muir built his cabin. And on that stone, part of this quote is written on that marker. But listen to what John Muir wrote. By the way, John Muir, he was a deeply spiritual man that recognized God just overflowing in this beautiful outdoor space. He said he never wanted to take a hike, but he would take a saunter. And the difference is, a hike is, you got to make time. You're going somewhere. But a saunter's taking your time. It's more of a fast stroll. This is what he said about getting into nature. He said, walk away quietly in any direction and taste the freedom of the mountaineer. Camp out among the grasses and gentians of glacial meadows and craggy garden nooks full of nature's darlings. Climb the meadows and get their good tidings. Nature's peace will flow into you as sunshine flows into trees. The winds will blow their own freshness into you and the storms their energy, while cares will drop off like autumn leaves. As age comes on, one source of enjoyment after another is closed, but nature's sources never fail. Like a generous host, she offers her brimming cups in endless variety, served in a grand hall, the sky its ceiling, the mountains its walls, decorated with glorious paintings and enlivened with bands of music ever playing. Petty discomforts that beset the awkward guest, the unskilled camper, are quickly forgotten, while all that is precious remains. Fears vanish as soon as one is fairly free in the wilderness. That's just beautiful. You know, another way that we can connect with God has to do with service, giving ourselves, lending ourselves to others for their betterment, with no desire for anything on our own. Our own Crosswalker, Keith Ridenour, has been doing this for some time. He's our saxophonist extraordinaire at Crosswalk and pianist now too, so we'll be getting him on keyboard whenever we get back together. Can't wait for that. And among other things, he's also a painter and whatnot. But one of the things he's been doing for some time is going to nursing homes or even skilled nursing care facilities and giving them a concert. Sometimes it's just him with a speaker, and he puts on whatever music and just plays along with it and kind of riffs off. If you've ever heard Keith play, you can just imagine how cool this is. You know, the Beatles doing whatever, and Keith is just riffing on his sax or his flute or whatever. It would be really, really cool. And he goes and he does that just to bring joy to the people who are there. And when he's there, he's not just doing his sax and his flute, but he's trying to spread joy with these folks who are having a rough go. And I believe that he spreads joy really, really, really well. New thing that he's trying on for size is just making phone calls to people, even crosswalkers that he doesn't know too well, because he came across this study that said that when you are serving somebody else, you become a happier person. He's living proof that it's true. Another Crosswalker, Karen Kinney, she's going to be in the Hall of Fame, you know, with Crosswalk someday because of what her great offering is and just calling people and checking in on them. She is a team unto herself of pastoral care, and I so appreciate her because of the love that she gives. And I'm very confident that it feeds her soul as well. shouldn't surprise us that when we connect with other human beings in that kind of a way, that God would use that experience itself to restore us as well. It is a spiritual activity that is both a strange giving and receiving type of thing. So you could try serving. I think that's a winner. Another thing I want to talk about has to do with learning. Now, I'm kind of a nerd, and I love to read. I love to learn new stuff. That's been a hard thing with COVID because it's really pushed me in terms of time and energy and all that. So I haven't been able to read as much as I normally like to or listen to stuff I normally like to. But when things are normal, I love being exposed to new ideas through podcasts, through books, through magazines, through seminars, for attending different events with colleagues and this kind of stuff. I love it. And those events of exposing myself to new authors, new thinkers, God uses to open me up, to stretch me out. And so so that's another way for you to learn and to grow and to connect with God in ways that you wouldn't. The thing about learning is that if we're not changing any of our inputs into our life, if we're just listening to the same thing over and over and over, there's a good chance we are not going to be growing much intellectually. So this is a wonderful way to open yourself up to the Spirit of God, to connect with God more fully. So I hope you'll do that as well. I would be remiss if I didn't talk about one more thing, though, that probably is more important, in my humble opinion, than any other thing that we've talked about. And it is not necessarily popular, by the way, because it's not easy to do. And that is contemplation. I first learned about contemplation, which is kind of quiet time, stillness, silence, solitude, all that kind of wrapped into one. I learned about it in my late teens. I would spend the summers in northern Michigan at our family cottage. We didn't own a college. Our cottage in northern Michigan, and work in the cherry orchards or eventually a restaurant during the day. And when I'd have time, we didn't have a TV, or we couldn't get anything if we had one. And so there was a lot of calm at night, which I absolutely loved. And I would read a lot. And one of the books that I read was actually a Christian classic written by a guy named Richard Foster. He wrote a book called The Celebration of Discipline. And in this book, he goes through a range of spiritual disciplines that help us connect with God. And contemplation was one of those. Now, at Crosswalk, we are nerds when it comes to the Enneagram. The official word for that is Enneanerd, and I'm one of them. I have found great benefit from the Enneagram. It's this ancient personality test, which is strangely on the nose for me and for many other people. And what I use it for in particular has to do with really seeing myself. It's not magic. It's just a way to see ourselves, to understand ourselves more differently. And it's one of the most powerful tools that I've come across in my entire life. It helps me have an idea about what motivates me. It helps me understand what I look like when I'm not my best, and something to aspire to for when I'm at my best, and what I kind of look like when I'm in between that space. It also clues me into what are some maybe positive and negative motivations that might lead me to do certain things. It's helpful in a number of ways. And one of the things that it's also helpful with is it gives me a clue of when we're talking about contemplation, just being still, silent, alone. It helps me understand how I need to approach that time. So meditation, contemplation, these are words that can be used almost interchangeably. It is something that every religious tradition celebrates. Every religious tradition you can find meditation a part of. Jesus certainly meditated. Absolutely he did. He got away to quiet places so that he could be alone, that he could be still, that he could be silent. I would go so far to say that every spiritual great of every religious tradition meditated. It is a common denominator that we really need to pay attention to. One of the reasons why, it is becoming more popular in our culture, but one of the reasons it's not so popular is because it's difficult. We live in an incredibly noisy culture, where we are continually bombarded by all manner of distractions. And what contemplation does, or meditation does, is it tells us to take a break from that, to pull back. So there is a book that I highly recommend called The Sacred Enneagram by a man named Chris Huerts. And his wife, Philina Huerts, has also written a book, a couple of books, on understanding and integrating meditation into your life. She has a recent one about integrating meditation in your busy life. Well, our own crosswalker, Stephen Corley, actually has gotten to know Philina Huerts, and he has somehow worked out a brief interview to help us understand through an expert's eyes how these three words, solitude, stillness, and silence, mean more or less important things depending on our Enneagram type. So let's listen in on the conversation between Stephen and Philina and learn a little bit something about that.
Philina, thanks so much for taking time out to be with us today, to be with me. Want to hear your voice and your words and your encouragement for us to find paths to connecting with God during global pandemic. It hasn't been an easy year for any of us. We've all had our challenges, and as the relentlessness continues, I just love some words from you on how to engage and find our paths to the God that's around us.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate that. Yeah, this has been a difficult year for so many of us, and these times are fragile. We're all facing various challenges individually and collectively. And sometimes during the most difficult of circumstances, it can seem as if God isn't near. It's like many of us are not maybe experiencing God as we're used to, maybe with the particular faculties or modes of connection that are most familiar, perhaps those have gone kind of quiet and silent. But what we find through the historical Christian contemplative tradition is that it is actually the times when God seems most quiet that God is actually most near. And so you can evaluate that however you wish with your experience, but solitude, silence, and stillness are hallmarks of the contemplative tradition. And so here, many of us find ourselves in kind of a forced solitude, silence, and stillness, but this is a great opportunity for us to press in and go deeper with different expressions of God and who God is in our life and how we might connect with God. What we find is that when we are intentional about solitude, so that means rather than resisting it and bemoaning our circumstances of being in various forms of isolation because of the pandemic, when we can really just intentionally come into solitude, we find that practicing an embrace of solitude allows us to be more present to ourselves and what we're experiencing, more present to God and how God is wanting to show up in these trying times, and then ultimately more present to one another. And these are times when we're having to be really creative in how to be present, right? Yeah. So this solitude becomes a real gift to deepening our capacity for presence. And then silence, so many of us are experiencing different forms of silence. Maybe we were used to gathering with friends and family on more occasions, being together in different ways, experiencing that kind of interaction. But now we're forced into a different kind of experience of not having as many forms of connection. When we can embrace these new experiences of silence and actually make that our prayer, then we find that we develop this capacity to listen to ourselves and what's going on, to listen to God and how God is wanting to communicate with us perhaps in new and unfamiliar ways. And then we become more able to really hear one another. So in these moments when we connect that in some ways are rather rare and dear for many of us, we have a fine-tuned capacity to really hear one another, maybe in deeper ways than we were accustomed to before the pandemic. And then the stillness, again, kind of a forced stillness. I was meeting with one of my spiritual direction clients yesterday who mentioned that she could just never leave her house. You know, I mean, groceries can be delivered in, like, basically, because she doesn't get to go to her office for work during the pandemic, she could like never leave her house. There is this degree of forced stillness that's occurring for many of us. But when we can make stillness a part of our prayer, we develop this capacity then to respond to our life circumstances rather than react from a place of fear or anxiety. Or from a place of just ego-driven agenda. And so what we find is that when we can turn our solitude, silence, and stillness into an intentional prayer practice by just embracing it rather than resisting it, then we can deepen our capacity for a presence, to be able to hear and really listen, and then to respond from our best and highest self and be hopefully more aligned with the will of God in our life.
And so, that is just awesome.
Yeah, and I know you know what I'm talking about, Steve.
I practice.
Yeah, well, why don't we just take a few minutes now to enter into an intentional solitude, silence, and stillness for a few moments. Would that be all right?
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right. So as you know, when I meet with individuals and groups in terms of like retreat or meeting one-on-one, I really like to pay attention to the posture, because our posture communicates a lot. It's that subtle language, right? And so if you would just let yourself come into your seat in a mindful way, make any adjustments that you need to so that the body is supported, but attentive and alert. So you might place both feet on the floor as a way of connecting to the earth and the ground, gravity holding you here in this place. Or you might sit in a cross-legged position, just in whatever way allows you to feel that support beneath you. And then why don't we take a few deep belly breaths? This is a way of just kind of clearing the chaos of the moment before and allowing us to come into the present moment just a little bit more. And so three belly breaths actually help reset the nervous system. So this isn't anything that's necessarily esoteric. It's more really a part of being incarnated and a whole person, mind, body, spirit. So checking in with the breath and inhaling deeply from the belly and exhaling completely, letting all that breath out and then letting the breath return on the in breath from the belly. And exhale completely. One more big belly breath, inhaling fully, exhaling completely. Now letting that breath return to its normal function, we can notice the effortless effort of the body breathing itself. Notice yourself sitting in this seat in the room that you're in. in the relative solitude. If you find yourself alone in your room, you can notice that in that aloneness, we are connected. And taking a moment to notice the presence of God. And you might just inquire, what is God's presence like here in this solitude? And then bring your attention to yourself. Without judgment, just checking in and noticing how it is for you to be in relative solitude. Maybe it's like a cold drink of water in the desert, or maybe it's really uncomfortable. Without critiquing it, just notice what it's like for you and offer that back to God. And now notice the relative silence. Notice what it's like to be quiet. Notice what it's like to let your ears be attuned to silence. The mystics say that silence is God's first language. Notice how familiar you are or unfamiliar you are with this language of God. And just see what God is like in the silence. Without judgment, notice what it's like for you in the silence. And then notice, if you can, how tuning into silence creates more capacity to listen. And now bring your attention to the stillness. Notice if this is uncomfortable or comfortable for you, without judging. If you notice uncomfortability, just take a few breaths, intentional deep breaths. And then notice what God is like in this stillness. And then notice, if you can, situations in your life, relationships, community, society, anything that is particularly difficult for you, bring that to mind. And then notice if there's any particular impulse to want to control or fix or lash out or hide. Again, without judgment, just paying attention being present, listening. And then see if you can imagine what it might be like to be less reactive and instead find freedom to respond. To respond from your best self, from that part of you that is tapped into the resources of the fruit of the Spirit. Just see if you can taste what that might be like. And you might take another deep breath, finding your connection to the Spirit of God through the breath, the Spirit who is breath. Bringing your hands to your heart, we can collectively say, Amen. Let it be.
Well, one thing I want to talk about finally has to do with fruit. You know, Jesus in this Sermon on the Mount, in his vine and branches talk that he gave the disciples, said that when we're connected to that vine, we will bear much fruit. We don't connect to the vine in order to bear fruit. This is a byproduct of being connected. It's almost like something that just naturally happens when we're so connected to that fruit. Well, our own crosswalker, Linda Murphy, has been practicing meditation for some time. She even taught a class on it at Crosswalk one time, which was great. She also happens to be a musician, and she also happens to be a poet. And from her meditation came some beautiful fruit in the form of a poem. And I want to leave you with this today. It's just beautiful. It's entitled Come Away, recently crafted by our own Linda Murphy. When all I see is suffering, the bleeding and the war cries, when all I hear is trumpeting hate speech, poisonous to my soul, when all I feel is a pain-racked body, bleeding my brain of cognition, I turn to an inner voice that says, come away with me, into my heart, into the safety of my realm. Come away from your tear-stained window pane into the sunlit fields of childhood. Come away and let me hold you till your body dissolves into oneness, where the truth of who you are does not struggle, where fear releases on the rhythms of your breath, where beneath everything is this forgotten foundation of joy. Amen. Have a great week.